You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Ford,
Corey Doctorow,
Brent Simpson,
Robin Mock,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is...
Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm super excited to have Owen Coffer back on the show with me today to talk about his new book, The Foul Twins, Deny All Charges, which is out everywhere today. And this is the second book in a spinoff series that that Owen has that which spun off of the Artemis Fowl books. Hugely popular. And if you remember a couple of months ago, Owen was on the show and we were talking about the movie that is now available over at Disney Plus and the challenges and all the excitement around that movie finally coming to the screen. And I hope you've had a chance to watch it. I know we had a family movie night when it came out and we just loved it. So welcome back to the show, Owen.
Thank you, Hank. It's so nice to be here. I can't remember when we talked before, was the movie still going to theaters or was it going to be a Disney Plus movie? Because
I think the news had just broken that it was going to Disney Plus.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, it seems like another world. I mean, that seems so much has happened.
It has in
intervening months. If that would have been April maybe, or I don't know, or somewhere around then, but world seems to have just turned upside down.
Yeah, it was springtime, and if I remember right, we talked just a little bit about this new kind of wrinkle in everything, you know, known as COVID-19, what that may or may not bring for the summer and fall and the intervening months. How's it been going for you? With I'm asking everyone now. How this lockdown and the news of the pandemic and all, how's that affecting you personally and your creative process?
I've been, I think, among the lucky end of the spectrum in that I work a lot from my office in the garden and nothing has changed there really. And also my children are older, so they are 23 and 17. So I'm not educating anybody, and I think that is probably one of the most difficult things people have had to face, not only doing their jobs from home, but also trying to keep their kids up to speed with their education and in subjects they're not necessarily experts on themselves. So that's been really tough. And I think our only problem really is my wife and I are quite elderly, so we need to spend a lot of time with them. But luckily, that has been something which has been allowed by the government, in that caring for an elderly relative is seen as a necessary work. So luckily, we're still able to do that.
Well, I'm happy to hear that you guys are healthy and well, that you're weathering this nicely. You know, some people, because writers do tend to spend a lot of time alone and in their offices and with their computer and. Or notepad or whatever it is. So it on the surface, it would seem like this shouldn't be a whole lot of change in a writer's life. But there's some people are really struggling with the mental aspects of what's going on. It's strange times, that's for sure.
That's for sure. And a lot of my friends are in that boat where there's a pressure on writers now to do lots. People are saying, well, you must have been getting a lot done because you know, you're isolated, but and people are really feeling that pressure. I think I haven't really worried about it. Maybe it's my age, and maybe it's my work patterns anyway. But I know some of my friends are really struggling.
Yeah. The new book is an interesting spinoff of the Artemis Fowl series, that your original series that kind of launched you into superstardom as a writer. How many books were in that original series?
The original series had 8 books, and I think 2 novellas. There was one encyclopedia. So there was, and then 4 graphic novels. So there's quite a collection. This book, this series is going to be a much simpler affair. I think it'll probably be a trilogy. And I'll leave it at that. And any adaptions or adaptations won't involve me. So I don't really have time to do another 20-year project. so I think three will do, and then I'll move on to Pastures New.
Well, I remember when you and I first talked, it was the end of last year or the beginning of this year. I can't remember exactly now. But your novel High Fire had just come out.
And that's right. Yeah.
For everyone that was familiar with the Artemis Fowl series, High Fire was such a departure from that thing that you had built. This whole world of Artemis Fowl. And I understand the need to kind of get away from that and cleanse the palate and pursue other things. Do you plan to veer out of this world again and do other projects like High Fire?
Yeah, I think I would probably do another High Fire. It was so refreshing for my, it was really a jolt of electricity to the brain to just reset and do something so weird and wacky. And there's the common thread of, I think, humor and perhaps maybe fantasy running through it there. But High Fire was good. Apart from the fact that it was a dragon, it was quite realistic, apart from that one detail. I know that's quite a large detail. But I definitely would like to explore as many different genres as I can. I'd love to do a straightforward, love story, ghost story. I've done a few crime books. I'd like to do more of those. I want to do more musical theater. So there's a lot of stuff I'd like to do, but I suppose my central pillar has always been the Fowl family. So for at least 2 more years, I'll stick with them and fit in other projects around them. But eventually I will just have to retire that whole family. And I think I will probably do that after the next Fowl book, which I've started work on now.
Writers, a lot of times we'll get advice from people in the publishing industry, and it's probably good advice to stick with what readers are familiar with you for. And, if you've broken out because of the Artemis Fowl series, keep giving people that and don't veer too far off of that. Different authors have had different levels of success with breaking out to do other things. J.K. Rowling, so famous for the Harry Potter series, but also writes really, really great mysteries as Robert Galbraith does it under a pen name for different reasons. Is there ever any of that trepidation with you when veering off to do a project like High Fire?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, even though I've always said that writing for kids is just as hard as writing for adults, when you're actually doing it, you wonder, should I be doing something differently? Am I kidding myself to think I can write a successful book for adults? So you get all your insecurities come flooding back. And then even if you get a book deal and you think, okay, so I've got a publisher now, but are they just going to publish it because it's me, or do they believe in the book? And then it comes out and it does really, High Fire did really well. That was great. It was able to get rid of one of those monkeys on my back that I wasn't actually able to do it, because I think it probably got some of the best reviews I've ever got. And that was really nice. And so it's given me the courage to kind of just do whichever book I want, as long as I can keep kids books fans happy in that, I might not do a Fowl book, but I'll certainly do another magical book. And we'll see. It's very unusual. It's very rare, actually, that an author can step away from a really successful series and then do another really successful series. I think Rick Riordan has managed it really well. Right. J.K. Rowling has managed it. I'm having mixed success. I mean, the twins are doing really well, but not as well as Artemis, I suppose, in sales. But we'll see. You know, this the second book now, I think, will be a real telling volume, because the first book established that it exists. And will it take off in the second book? We'll see. Fingers crossed.
Right. Well, after having written 8 books in the original Artemis Fowl series, and then the supplemental books that you put together, you've built quite a world with characters and with rules, and you know, the world operates in a certain way. So when you stepped back into that world with the Fowl twins, was it, you know, sort of like putting on an old comfortable pair of shoes where, you know, okay, I know what this world is. I know what my constraints are. Was it easier to get a story going in that pre-existing world?
It was in some ways, because it did certainly feel like putting on an old coat, a comfortable old coat. But I had to remember that, not to take it for granted that anyone reading this book would know anything about Artemis Fowl other than maybe the name, would have any experience or interest in what happened in the Artemis Fowl books. So I had to build it just like I was building a new series. And also then you had to be aware that a lot of people would know what happened in the Artemis books and would be aware of the world. And you didn't want to present all this stuff again to them in a way that they would be bored. So you had to walk that line with exposition, that it was entertaining for newcomers and veterans. So everybody would enjoy reading these little sections, and one side wouldn't feel, well, I know this, and the other side wouldn't feel, well, this is not really very developed. So yeah, that was quite difficult. But once I got the hang of it, I started to write these little asides and prologues that were entertaining in their own right. So even if you knew the stuff, it was like a little callback for you that was interesting to read. And if you didn't know it, there was just enough detail there for you to make you feel like you were you weren't starting in a place of puzzlement, if you know what I mean.
The Novel Factory Online is software for the serious writer. With features like notes that are automatically organized, that means no more drowning in piles of paper, notes, or spending hours organizing digital folder structures. The Novel Factory offers clear, obvious structures for noting down information about plot, characters, locations, and everything else relating to your novel. Innovative features like the roadmap take you from concept to finished novel. The roadmap is an optional step-by-step guide to writing a novel that takes you from the premise to final manuscript and beyond. It draws on tried and true, tested theory that lies behind the majority of best-selling novels and blockbuster movies. Access your writing anywhere. The web version of the Novel Factory can be accessed anywhere you have internet. So you can write your novel on the train to work, while walking the dog, or climbing a mountain. Just log in and all your drafts and notes will be at your fingertips. Go to novel-writer.com to see how this powerful software can unleash your creative side. Use code HANK2020 for 20% off. That's the Novel Factory.
Authors, I have a fantastic new service to tell you about. It's called PubSite. PubSite is a service to help you build your very own website, your home on the web, where you can promote your work and give your fans a place to connect with you. PubSite is a website platform that allows every author, regardless of budget, to have a great-looking professional website. Developed by the book marketing professionals at FSB Associates, PubSite is the new, easy-to-use DIY website builder developed specifically for books and authors. Whether you're an author of one book or 20, or a small publisher, PubSite allows you to build, design, and most importantly, update your website pain-free. No need to be dependent on a designer or webmaster to make a small but costly change to your website. Save the money and do it yourself. PubSite is the best platform for authors because it's a book-centric platform. PubSite was built just for authors and small publishers. Every design, feature, and layout is book-centric. They have customized designs for you to use. It's easy to build. No coding or HTML is necessary to create a stunning, professional-looking website with all the features you want. Get a custom domain name, yourname.com. It's simple to update. You can add all of your books, add a blog and a book tour, sell from any retailer, manage your email list and social media, and even do e-commerce. build your website with a 14-day free trial, then pay just $19.99 per month, which includes hosting. And we offer packages starting at $499 to set up the website for you. Pub-site.com, the place to help authors find their home on the web.
That's a really great point, because I heard Stan Lee, the great Marvel comics, say one time that he used to tell writers in his writer's bullpen that to always assume that this is someone's first Marvel comic that they're reading. Yeah. And of course, if not done well, you get some very clunky exposition. But done well, you can give information that acts as sort of a wink and a nod to the old readers while filling in the new readers. That has to be really challenging, but probably can be a lot of fun as well, finding new ways to tell the same story.
Well, I think the classic example is like Bruce Wayne's parents, where how many times have we seen that in both in movies and comic books, where the pearls go flying, and then at the last shot is Bruce on his knees in the rain, crying up to the sky. It just, you have to keep looking for different, just even a different angle to show that. And that was the challenge with the Fowl Twins, to come up with a different angle on the exposition and to see it through fresh eyes. And that's why it's mostly new characters, because it's a new way to present, I suppose, old information. But when as soon as you accept that as a challenge, then it becomes enjoyable to me. How can I make this work and to make it seem really simple and something that just flowed out of me, whereas in fact it's very much constructive.
Did you know all along that there would be a Fowl Twin series, or when did the idea for this come to you?
Well, someone asked me. I was on my last tour for Artemis Fowl, which the Last Guardian, and I was asked a few times on the road, would I ever go back? And I was initially, I was just saying no, and I could see people weren't really happy with that. So I thought, well, you know what, I'm just going to make up an answer. And I said, well, I'm definitely not coming back for 5 years. But in 5 years, I probably will come back, and I think I'll use the twins, because then I will be able to still have that window into the fairy world. And I didn't really think after 5 years anyone will care. So if I thought I would just say this, and if I do it, great. And if I don't, no one's going to remember. But after when the 5 years were passed, it went to, I think, nearly 7 years. I found that actually that the idea had taken root in my own brain, and I had either been subconsciously or just on the edge of my consciousness thinking of ideas. And it just seemed like a natural fit then when the movie was announced, that I thought, well, if the movie's going to come out, this would be a great time to springboard off that and to actually do that thing with the twins. And I ended up, of course, anticipating, you know, the movie was put back by a year, and I had a book done. So the book came out a year before the movie. But it just seemed like the right time. I was not jaded anymore with that world. I was ready to go back into it. I was actually had come around to being quite proud of it, which you don't really. I don't. When I'm working on something, I'm not really proud of it. That takes years. It takes me years, at least. So I'll be proud of this probably in, 2025. That will be, I shouldn't joke, but that will probably be when one of Trump's daughters is president at that point. So the world will need a laugh, and I will supply.
Right. That's a great point that you bring up, Owen, about, not being jaded with the work that you have built. Is that a challenge when you have a long running series and characters that you embody and write for so long, that is there ever the temptation to just phone it in because this is something that can it may seem on the surface, well, this could kind of write itself. What are some of the challenges of carrying on that have so much story and keeping it fresh and more importantly, keeping it fresh for you, because if you're excited about it, that comes across on the page. If it's something that you're bored with, or, you know, or mentally done with, that also translates to the page.
Absolutely. I work in an office on my own for 8-9 months on a book, and I really need to be excited about coming out here. And if I'm not excited, it really shows up in the work. And I can see that happening, and I could see it happening towards the end of the Foul series. And the only thing that kept it going was when I realized I had started the 8th book, and I had kind of reluctantly started it. And then I said to myself, you know what, this is the last one. And when I made that decision, all of a sudden, I became very excited about, you know, going out with it on a real bang. And so that really helped. But after that, I couldn't imagine going straight back in. And I know there are people who very successfully and who can do 20, 30 books in a series. And I suppose the ultimate would be Terry Pratchett there, who did all those Discworld books, and they're all amazing. And he never dipped, and he never lost it. And he diversified into different. I think his trick was that he could do books about various characters that would never even meet each other. He could have whole different arms of the Discworld world, and they never even crossed over. So I really liked that about him. But I found that even now, the idea of doing more than 3 Foul Twins books, I would find that hard to face into. And the only reason I can keep excited is because I know it's going to be a shorter series. Also, I'm the idea of spending 20 more years on one series. It's just not really practical. And there's so much I want to do that. And it does mean probably that I'll have to sacrifice readers, as, you know, they probably won't, a lot of readers might not follow me into another genre or out of the fantasy realm. So I don't know, but you really can't. I'm very lucky in that I've had a huge series, and that gives me a lot of latitude to kind of follow what I want to work on. And I'm not really relying on sales to keep me afloat. Now, obviously, I can't just sacrifice everything. So I can do one book, maybe that's going to be a risk, and then I'll come back and do something like High Fire, which I know will probably do pretty well. But I'm not a great career builder. And I suppose if I was, I would just be still doing Artemis books, but I would find that quite difficult.
So for the listeners that aren't familiar with the Foul Twins, this new book is the second book in the Foul Twin series, Deny All Charges. The first one was just called The Foul Twins. Who are the Foul Twins, and how do they factor into this larger world that you've built?
The Foul Twins are like the next generation of the Fowls, take up the shenanigans baton. And they are Artemis Fowl's little brothers. And I suppose the jumping off point for them is that in the last Artemis Fowl adventure, they were possessed by the spirits of dead fairies who were buried on the Fowl estate. That sounds very complicated, I know, but it left them with some magic in their systems. So magic attracts magic, and so they are constantly getting into the mix with magical creatures. And in the first book, they meet this tiny troll who they befriend, and unbeknownst to them, this troll's venom may contain the secret to eternal youth, and so it's hunted by both fairies and humans alike, with the Foul Twins in the middle. So they go off around the world. They end up on the Orient Express. They go to the islands of Scilly. They're in France for a while. They go to Amsterdam, all the while being chased by both a shadowy government organization called Acronym, which is being led by a Spanish nun. And also then they're being chased by Lord Teddy Bleedem Dry, the Duke of Scilly, who wants to live forever. So it's a really high adventure, gothic comedy fairy tale. And I tried to put a different spin on the style, so it doesn't really feel like the other Artemis books, even though you have a lot of the same situations and a lot of the same attributes with the characters. I tried to make it more arch more comic and more absurd and ridiculous, but still holds together in its own context, if you know what I mean.
Well, it feels like a very accessible spy thriller on one level, with kind of fantasy shenanigans woven into the story. When you start thinking about a plot for the next book and what sort of scenario you're going to put the characters in, how do you start coming up with the conflict and the plot that's going to drive the story forward?
I usually start with a bunch of tiny ideas, and that would be it could be something as simple as a good character name. I like this character name, or a situation. I like the idea of, for example, in the book I'm working on now, I like the idea that Miles is giving a lecture that he's not qualified to give. So he's giving a lecture, and he's on false pretenses, and he qualifies during the lecture. So he gets an email at the end of the lecture, say, yes, you're now a doctor. And I like that. So just little funny situations. And books usually aren't one big idea for me. They're like 100 tiny ideas. And even though I may not initially know how these ideas knit together, it is amazing how your subconscious works and it starts piecing together the jigsaw. So I'm always pretty confident that these ideas will work. And usually they do. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes I waste a lot of time. But usually I'm okay. But it's a lot of, I rarely have one idea that gives me a through line. And often, usually I don't really know when I start a book. I know that there's a big gaping black hole in the middle of it, and I just pray that I can I can somehow fill that hole. And sometimes, usually I get to a crisis, and it often takes me a couple of months just to find out what is going to plug that hole. But I used to let that hold me back, but now I just expect it and I just go.
I know in the beginning of the writing process for you, there's a lot of brainstorming and a lot of trying out ideas and seeing how these ideas knit together. Do you write with a plan? Do you plot out the book ahead of time, or are you, writing by the seat of your pants, as we like to say?
It's a bit of both. I do have a plan. It's usually about 2 pages long, and it's very, very sparse. And it's usually done in points. And I would usually have a beginning and maybe some kind of a middle. And I know I need to be in, I need to be in the past in Rio de Janeiro at the end or something ridiculous. And that's I use that as more as a target, and it's almost a challenge. I have to get to this point. How do I do that? And so there's a lot of seat of the pants writing, but it does help to have that safety net of a plan, even though it is kind of bare. It definitely makes me feel a little bit more relaxed and confident in what I'm doing.
I love that idea of having an ultimate ending that seems sort of ludicrous, in light of the present story and figuring out how to get to that point. That has to be a lot of fun working in that way.
It's great fun. And the thing is, it's like you said, that it's a ludicrous idea. So you have to make it get there in such a way that it seems perfectly reasonable. It may be surprising, and it may be, you might say, oh, that's very clever that Beckett would do that or Miles would do that. But it can't just be a ridiculous moment where, jump the shark moment where, that's just stupid, and you lose faith in the entire book. And that happens a lot, I think, in books and in movies, where it's a perfectly good movie, and then suddenly they do something really ridiculous at the end that's just totally not in keeping with the characters and not in keeping, with the story so far. And you have to make sure that doesn't happen. It has to be something that, while unexpected, it's still acceptable.
Right. Your publisher is Disney Hyperion. How are they as a publisher to work with? And, being such a big media conglomerate and someone that's so tightly woven into the fabric of entertainment, does that ever factor into, the creation process of your books, or Do they offer any input at all, or what are they like as a publisher to work with?
Well, I've always worked with a very small group of not more than five people. So they've been great. And I've had the same editor for the past. I've had two editors in total with Disney, and I've had the same editor for about 12 years now. So I work with her, and I work with two people in publicity, and that's really about it. And the Disney publishing arm is very separate from the Disney movie company, and there's very little crossover. Disney Hyperion is actually a very small, well-contained company, so you don't really feel. I'm with much smaller companies that feel like much bigger outfits, you know. So I have books with HarperCollins as well, and that feels so much bigger than Disney Publishing. If you go into their offices, you would be amazed. They're beautiful, but there might be 10 people there. So it's not like then you go into Disney Movies and it's like a little town, you know. It's just massive. Right. So it's not the same thing at all. And they don't really, it's like never the twain shall meet, really. In the course of the movie now, there was quite a bit of back and forth and cooperation. But that's the first time I'd seen that happen.
No. Have you seen changes in publishing and, maybe not even publishing, but the way that books get out to people and stories get out to people? What has changed and evolved over your illustrious career of writing Artemis Fowl and all the great stuff that you've done?
I think publishing has changed a lot in that people who are writing books, it's different. I mean, it used to be, it seems to me, kind of a gentler industry where people wrote lovely books about speaking animals. But now there's a lot more media involved. Everybody has to have a Twitter and Facebook, and that's part of your remit as an author to be involved online. I am on Instagram, but I have help from a young guy because it's not really my world. You know, I really feel like a fish out of water. And I remember a couple of years ago, they brought me over, and because the movie was coming out, they brought me to Facebook offices and Instagram, and these lovely young people were trying to explain to me about stories and, you know, engagements. And I realized they were speaking really slowly because because I was over 30. I mean, they didn't know how much over 30 I was, because over 30 is, you know, the distant future to these young people. And I don't mean that in a bad way. That's how I felt. I was 53. So, but I could have been 31 or 100, if you know what I mean. It didn't. Right. And I just felt, this is not the place for me. I actually don't feel comfortable putting photos up of, or selling myself online, you know, selling my, so, which is why I have a guy who does that for me. And he's really good at it. And also, books have become, there's a lot, you know, you have to think it. I don't do it because I don't know how to do it, but you have to be aware of how the marketing is going to go when you're writing the book, which, because I think Harry Potter made children's books like profitable, and publishers go, oh, wait a minute, you can make money from kids' books now. So that changed the game very quickly, because up to that point, people didn't really pay attention to kids' books that much. It wasn't really, if you went to, Comic-Con, there's not going to be a huge, big market for kids' books or kids' comics. But now all of these festivals, book festivals and conventions, they all have massive kids' books present. So it's a whole new world. And it's one, I did I forget what convention it was, but it was mostly younger writers. I think it was the All Fest, and all of the writers, they knew a lot of their readers. Like, they knew them personally from Instagram and Twitter, and they spent a large part of their day. Like, this, that was, I do my social for 2 hours in the morning, and they replied to all these people, and they interact with them. And I think that's amazing. That's fantastic. But like, I'm not going to do that, but it's amazing that you're doing it. So sometimes I feel like my era is kind of over, like the traditional old fashioned storyteller. It's like, it is a new era, and it, you know, in many ways it's a better era because the readers have access to the writers. And I think that's fantastic, but it's not really for me.
Right. Owen, with a wildly popular series under your belt, like the Artemis Fowl series and now the Fowl Twins and, you know, lots of great stuff coming out there. What gets you excited these days? What challenges you and, you know, gets you back in the writing office and you know, makes you want to keep plunging forward?
I think I'm really interested in collaborations now. I like to have my solid central column, which is always the novel I'm working on. But beside that, I like to collaborate. I really love graphic novels. So I'm on my second original one with my collaborator, Andrew Duncan and Giovanni Rigano, the artist. I love theater. So at the moment, I'm developing a show. Hopefully that will go out in the new year when theaters are back open again. So yeah, collaborations are a great way to stay active, to stay in touch with what's happening now in culture and theater and in literature. And I like working with actors, people who bring something to the material. I'm not really interested in someone who's going to just do what I've said. I like to see people who, you know, come with their own arsenal of weapons to bring to a show. So I think that's what keeps me going. Because, you know, occasionally you do think, well, who does the world need another Leprechaun book now? I mean, does it need number 20? But then I go out on the road and I meet the people who actually read the books and love the books, and that energizes you to come back in. So I've really missed that this year. Well, not the whole year, but I think I stopped touring in February. So I've missed the interaction with the readers a lot. So I'm looking forward to getting back out there again.
Absolutely. I think we're all praying for the resumption of some normalcy in that area for sure. The new book, The Fowl Twins Deny All Charges, is out, available everywhere now. Owen, thank you so much for taking time to come back on the show today. If people are just, you know, God forbid, for whatever reason, just discovering you and your work, where can they dig into all the great stuff that you do?
There's a lot of resources on my website, which is just owencolfer.com. So if you go on there, you can see all the books and you can see videos that I've done with various news stations and shows. And you can find out a little bit about me and a little about everything that I've done. So definitely that's the best place to go.
Great. And we'll put links to that in the show notes to make it easy for people to find.
Right.
Owen, always a pleasure to talk with you. We're going to send everyone to pick up the new book. Thank you for taking time to come back on the show.
Thanks, Hank. Hopefully I'll talk to you in person next time.
Do you ever wonder if a person's critical thinking comes at the expense of their own happiness? Is it possible to be very happy and still practice excellent discernment? I used to wonder the same thing. Then I discovered the Trouble in Paradise podcast with Nigel Kent and Jasmine Starr, where they laugh as well as think about conspiracy theories and unexplained phenomena without ever getting bogged down in the age-old tug-of-war between logic and feeling. The Trouble in Paradise podcast is a joyful program for critical thinkers who have a sense of humor. Join Nigel and Jasmine as they probe the intriguing and wacky culture of odd occurrences, strange news, and ridiculous coincidences on this hilariously intelligent podcast. Trouble in Paradise on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Stitcher. Follow at Tipcast239 on Twitter. Trouble in Paradise with Nigel Kinn and Jasmine Starr, a happy podcast for critical thinkers like you.
What Death Taught Terrence by Derek McFadden. Life is a journey. So is the afterlife. At the end of his life, Terrence McDonald must discover its meaning or he'll be banned from the afterlife forever, and his soul will cease to exist. Join Terrence and those who love him on a poignant and unforgettable journey
through a life at once wonderful and harrowing. Learn what Terrence learned. See what Terrence sees. By this provocative story's end, readers may even learn a thing or two about themselves. See why people are saying things like, "Derek McFadden writes with an insight you can match." If you like the works of Mitch Albom, I think you'll find What Death Taught Terrence a worthy addition to your library, and the reading of it a life-affirming journey. I found the story immediately immersive, and it stuck with me long after I finished. What Death Taught Terrence by Derek McFadden, on sale now. Invasion Day, the first book in the They Came for Blood series by Scott Moon. David Osage is a dangerous man with a complicated past, but these days he's just trying to keep his head down, driving big rigs. One night he saddles himself with a hitchhiker, a nuisance who's more than she seemed, and that's when everything changes. No one was ready for an alien invasion. Death is raining from the sky, and the only questions left is, do you run, fight, or submit? For David Osage and his family, answering is as easy as giving the alien invaders the finger. Grab Book 1, Invasion Day, in the They Came for Blood series, and then follow it up with Book 2, Resistance Day, and Book 3, Victory Day. Available at Amazon.com.